Welcome to another episode of Side Hustle City, the podcast that helps you turn your side hustle into your main hustle, with your hosts, Adam Kaler and Kyle Stevie. All right, guys, back again for a new Side Hustle City podcast episode. And as always, Kyle Stevie, my hello. Trusty co-host.
Hello, hello.
And we have a special guest for you. We're really excited about this. Barry Griffiths, a man of Wales in the UK, and he professional wrestler, Cirque du Soleil, and now multifamily real estate investor, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, thank you guys for having me. Excited to be on the show. And just for people listening, not always people understand, I'm not from a big fish in the sea, right? Wales is actually a country, right? People, it's always funny. People don't realize Wales is a country. Everyone knows Scotland. Everyone knows Ireland. Everyone knows England. But Wales is always the forgotten country, and we are our own country. We're very proud. Massive rugby players and supporters, so and big drinkers as well.
Nice.
Ryan Giggs and Gareth Bale as well, right?
There we go. Yeah, man. Oh, you're speaking my language. I'm a big football fan. Yeah, Liverpool's my team.
Mine too. There we go. You'll never walk alone, brother. we're spirit animals.
Maybe we should turn this into a soccer podcast.
Well, we did just get an MLS team. So Cincinnati, FC Cincinnati, yes. You know, we went from, you know, the minor leagues, we went through a couple different levels of minor leagues.
No, we were in the USL the whole time.
Were we? I thought we were in another league before that.
No, we were USL the whole time. They dominated that league and got into MLS.
So we were getting,
learned a lesson about not knowing how to run a franchise.
Yeah, we were getting more people to our soccer games than we get at football or baseball games.
Wow.
So, I mean, you see the University of Cincinnati was packed. It seats maybe 36,000 people. But, I mean, you had people waiting like they couldn't get in because, you know, in Cincinnati, we've gone from being like a baseball town, I would say, when I was a kid and when you were a kid. We grew up playing baseball because Pete Rose is from here, Ken Griffey Jr. is from here, Dave Parker. A lot of really famous Major League Baseball players are from Cincinnati. So growing up as a kid, that's what you played. But it's really hard to get a bunch of kids together to play baseball. So, you know, a lot of times growing up, you played basketball and things like that, but that was the sport. Baseball was the sport everybody tried to get into. And at some point, I think maybe after our generation, everybody's kids got into soccer, aka football.
Yeah, and it's awesome because the greatest day of my life as a father, the greatest day of my life, were when Cayman Elijah Bowe said, I don't want to play baseball next summer. I was like, hallelujah, Jesus Christ. It is an hour and a half to 2 hour ordeal of kids not throwing strikes, walking around the bases, or you go to soccer and they're running around and they're done in 35, 40 minutes. And it's like, you guys are good at soccer. You're good athletes. Let's stick with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So Barry, what got you?
Is there a misconception about soccer there as well? I always heard that parents don't want to put their kids in soccer because there's no future. They know that football, you can make a ton of money. Baseball, you can make a ton of money. You know, NBA, you can make a ton of money, which isn't the reality of it, but they're so used to the MLS and people maybe not having that much opportunity to make it. Do you think there's a misconception?
I can talk to this because I'm going through this. I'm still going through this. So my boys were late bloomers, and they wound up being like some of the best soccer players in this area in high school. Okay. They got Division I bodies. Not quite Division I work ethic, but they're Division I bodies and Division I. And they had like Division II skills right around there. So they were always in like the recruiting, you know, channels. The difference between soccer and football here in the United States is that nobody else in the world plays American football. Mm-hmm. So you don't have competition for the roster spots, particularly at the smaller schools. If you look at the smaller schools here in the United States, like if you're looking at what's called the NAIA, the National Athletic Intercollegiate Association, whatever it is, they are all like their soccer rosters are nothing but like Brazilians, people from the Netherlands, people from England, Scotland, Wales, Ireland, Germany. They come over and they play in NAIA soccer. And if they've played professionally, they can still be in NAIA. They can't do that in NCAA, which is a different organization, which is the more well-known one. But if you played like two seasons of professional soccer in Portugal, you can only play two seasons of college soccer here in NAIA. So these guys are coming over and they're just 22, 23 years old, and they're competing with 17, 18-year-old American kids for roster spots. Oh, and the coaches are like,
not fair.
They're like, you're good, but he was professional. So I got a job. I got a job to keep. So that's been
he's been dribbling experience. A ball since he was 1 year old. Yeah. So.
But it's getting better. They're getting more focused in. They used to have a developmental academy league while the MLS teams and a few other organizations had them. And you're pretty much, if you got in one of those, you're pretty much guaranteed a Division I spot. Like, you had to be exceptional to get into that. So that kind of balanced it out a little bit. Same type of European structure. I mean, you know, same type of European structure where you're playing year round. It's not, but you're like doing film study. You're doing all this other stuff that the European kids are doing compared to where it was at. It was year round, but it was more lax. You only practice like 2 to 3 nights a week. If the weather was bad, you were, we're not going to practice.
Yeah.
Now, these kids are out in the snow. They're doing
good.
They haven't got the ball on their foot in competitive situations much more than the other levels did. And that's made a big difference.
Well, I mean, I would play sports unregulated on like blacktop when I was a kid, but my mom was afraid to put me in soccer because you're supposed to hit the ball with your head, and she was afraid I'd have a concussion or something. But here I am playing with no pads, playing football in the street.
I was going to say football. Yeah. Football is not a concussion sport, right? It's completely safe. There's never concussions.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, there's never any concussions when a guy hits you going, you know, some. I mean, even in your, you know, in your sport too. I mean, in wrestling, I mean, how many guys, you know, are suffering through injuries during that whole thing? I mean, people are like seriously injured doing that. I mean, and they're not, you know, doing anything like in football where you're intentionally trying to hurt someone. I mean, these guys are careful, but you still can't avoid getting serious injuries.
Yeah, it's you know, even though the outcome is predetermined and you're not really trying to hurt someone, you know, the risks are real, right? You're still jumping top rope, right? You're still the 300-pound guy, right? You're still, you know, getting hit for real, right? It's just not in the face and, you know, it's in safe areas. But yeah, it's pretty physically demanding. But it's just like any sport, right? There's always risks, right? You can friggin' tear your knee out playing tennis, right? You know,
yeah.
There's risks in everything. Yeah.
Well, you're definitely built more like a rugby guy than a soccer guy, right?
Yeah, well, I was, believe it or not. So most towns, they're either rugby. I grew up in a small town, so just give people context. There was 200 people that lived where I lived, right?
Oh, wow.
people say, hey, I grew up in a small town. Yeah, there was about 10,000 people. I'm like, that's a small town. Like, there was 200 people lived where there was a fish and chip shop. There was a post office. There was a small grocery store. It was my dad's business. And then there was 3 pubs.
Of course. Yeah, you're in Wales, right?
Yeah. So there was 3 pubs. So, you know, I grew up in a tiny little town like that.
So pretty much a country, small country town, it sounds like.
Yeah. Kind of not in the middle of nowhere, quite wasn't a lot going on. And that's kind of one of the main reasons I wanted more, I think. You know, I wanted different. I always wanted the bright lights and something more than outside of just, you know, doing what. Because what happens in that town is you do the same thing every week. You go and do what your dad does or what your dad did as a job. Like, you follow in his footsteps. You make money. You don't know. There's like a lot of great people, and they love their life, and it's a beautiful countryside and the most genuine people you'll ever meet. But I always wanted more, and I think that's what led me to wrestling, to coming over to the U.S., to, you know, living in Las Vegas, right?
Yeah, what did bring you here? So how did that all start? Like, how do you go from a small town? Because, you know, we've got a lot of people like that, especially, you know, our podcast is based in Kentucky. I think we've got a lot of Kentucky listeners. And there's a lot of small towns in Kentucky, probably similar to where you came from. Okay. So, I mean, if I'm a kid and I'm sitting around there, like, what – were you just born with this desire to do more and be more and get outside of that – what you were taught, like, hey, you just do what your dad does and you do what your uncle did and you know, how did you get out of that?
Are you tired of feeling lost in the world of trading and investing? Get informed and inspired with the Talking Trading Podcast. I'm Louise Bedford and I'll help you navigate the markets like a pro. Tune in each week and subscribe now at talkingtrading.com.au or on your favourite podcast app, or check out the link in the show notes. Talking Trading, this is how traders excel.
Yeah, I don't know what it was, to be honest with you, that made me want to be like that, but I always wanted more. Like, my friends would always be happy. Hey, let's just go to the pub, blah, blah, blah. I was always, hey, let's get a train here and go 2 hours here and go to Liverpool or, you know, one of these bigger places and have a better night. Like, you know, I could always remember that. And they'd be like, oh, no, I don't want to do that. And I always wanted that, you know, and that's a small part of wanting more, but I always wanted more. And I don't necessarily know why that was, but kind of essentially what happened to me was I was training. I love training. I love working out. I just loved it. And then one day I found weightlifting and fell in love with that. People depended on me, right? You play a team sport, you're dependent on other people. If someone doesn't play well and you play great, well, there's a good chance you're going to lose, right? But in weightlifting, it all falls on you, right? It's your diet, it's the time you spend in the gym, it's how hard you train and all this other stuff. So I was training, build a physique for myself. I was like 6'6", 280. And I was like, man, I'm just working for my dad as a carpenter. And I hated it. I was like the worst carpenter in the history of carpentry, I'd say, because I just hated it. I just landed in it. I didn't know what else I was going to do like everyone else. And I was lucky, right? Because my dad had a business and I could have taken over that business. And a lot of people probably would have loved that idea because they don't even have that, right? And my dad had a pretty solid business in that area. He was an undertaker as well. I did that a little bit.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That was an interesting side note.
You couldn't take on that wrestling name, though, could you?
I was the real undertaker.
You were.
I actually was a real life undertaker. But, as a captain, I hated it. Just wanted to do something else. And I saw wrestling come on TV one day, you know, and I'm thinking, what can I do with my life? What else can I do with this physique and all this training that I'm doing? And I saw them and I'm like, oh, they're pretty athletic. And I was athletic because I always played sports. And I was like, I think I can do that. And then coincidentally, a few months later, right, you talk about law of attraction or being open or all this stuff, right? A few months later, a wrestling, tiny little wrestling show. It was nothing like you probably imagine. No bright lights, no TV, you know. It was in a tent in a field, right?
Oh. That
gives you an idea. With a chandelier for the lighting, right?
Oh, yes. Yes.
And one side of the ring was pulled down because it'd been raining and the field was wet. And so the ring was like crooked, but it was amazing. And I went there and I met with a promoter and I was like, wow, this is kind of cool. And I really think I could do this, and struck up a relationship with him. He ended up turning into a bit of a mentor. I was wrestling in the UK, wrestling all over Europe, and then did a UK version of Gladiators in the UK. It was one of the Gladiator Goliath. That was my name. Did that for one series. And because of that, I was down in London one time doing some filming. And WWE were at the O2 Arena, massive arena down in London. And one of my friends was there and said, hey, why don't you just come over? I can get you in and we can meet with some of the representatives. And I'm sure they'd be interested in signing you. So I went over there, met with them, and they were like, hey, yeah, I'm 6'6", 280, maybe even 290 at the time. And they're like, yeah, I think we'd like to sign you. Because they had a look at one point, right? They had a saying, right? You can't teach height. You can't teach.
Yeah.
It's changed a lot since then. Skill level is a lot more important. But they just essentially looked at me like, all right, yeah, we'll have you. I don't care if you've never wrestled a day in your life. I don't care if you've got two left feet. We're going to sign you. So in 2010, I moved from this small little town to two suitcases worth of stuff. I moved to Tampa, Florida, and I just got off the plane. Beautiful weather, just like sunny.
This feels great.
Like I said, second day there. I move in January. The second day there, I'm in the pool at the hotel I'm in. The weekend, I'm at the beach. And, you know, there's beautiful weather, beautiful beaches, and beautiful, you know, other things as well. And I'm married now, so I got to be careful what I say. But I was just like, oh, my goodness. I remember being so, so, so happy. Like, just walking around and, like, it was just amazing. Because another thing, interesting thing was I came over to the US when I was 12 or 13, twice, and I just loved it. I loved it. At that time, I couldn't have thought for even, I didn't even dream it. It was so far off for me. I didn't even dream at that time of even thinking about living. But I loved the US. I loved like the smell of the pavement and the roads and the signs and just everything. And I just, you know, basketball, watching sports and TV, even the way the news came up, it was just, loved everything about it. I just never thought for a second. And here I am, whatever, 15 years later, coming off the plane again, living in the US. And I just remember for that first month or two, just anywhere I would drive, my head would be out the window, just looking at everything, thinking how amazing everything was. Didn't matter, excuse me, didn't matter what it was. It was just a street sign. And I was just like so infatuated with everything. I was just so happy. And it was just so amazing. It was just so cool to me. And I just really was so happy just to be. Fast forward a little bit, you know, I trained for about a year in Tampa. They have what they call FCW, which was Florida Championship Wrestling, for anyone who is a wrestling fan. Trained there for a year because they want to teach you, even though I'd wrestled before, they want to teach you their style, right? Their TV style. There's a TV style of wrestling and their style so that everyone wrestles the same, right? Because even if you've never wrestled someone, if they have a similar style and they know what you're going to do, it's easier, right? Whereas if everyone has 10 million different styles and it's not suited for TV, it doesn't look good. So it's a Vince McMahon, WWE type of style because you have Japanese, Mexican, British, all this kind of different styles of wrestling. So they teach you that. Was there for a year. And then made my debut on Monday Night Raw, like the main event. Like John Cena was fighting a guy called CM Punk. And it was like literally the end of the show. And I made my debut and it goes out and the camera's on me. And it's like crazy, 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 crazy. They went out to do pay-per-views, travel the world. Like done a ton of cool stuff in that short period of time. And then like in 2014, that kind of came to an end. They didn't renew my contract, which was a big surprise. And that's what kind of where real estate came in. And I'll get into that in a second. But then from there, I was like, hey, I'm a wrestler in another country. I never want to go back to a 9-to-5 job. Cause that's another reason, right? People get into wrestling because they don't want to, we're escaping reality. I always say that wrestlers, right. You know, we're trying to escape reality because we don't want that 9-to-5 job.
Well, there's worse ways to escape reality than what you did. So,
right. Yeah. True. But I was like, I can't go back to a 9-to-5 job, especially after being on TV and doing like, you know, I don't know if it was an ego thing or it was just like I just couldn't do it. And luckily, again, luck is where opportunity meets preparation, right? Cirque du Soleil were looking for someone to fill a role out in Las Vegas and went to the audition, did the audition, and luckily got the gig and just, again, like packed my bags. Like,
wow.
Fast forward like 5 or 6 years, 2 bags, sold everything I had in Florida. I had a wife at the time, so she kind of moved out with me, but 2 bags or 3 bags or whatever it was, moved my stuff to Vegas and like kind of started all over again. And what, if you want me to, like, I know you guys is a side hustle. My side hustle is real estate and it's becoming kind of a more of a main hustle. And I love that. What happened with me was I bought a house in 2014, the January of 2014, a $435,000 home, which came with a $2,600 a month mortgage payment, So this is January, right? I'm all happy about this house. Everything's great. I'm going to be the world heavyweight champion. In my head, that's how I was thinking, you know, and you have to, right? And it wasn't a place of arrogance. It was just what I thought. And my plan A was to be the world heavyweight champion. Plan B was to be the world heavyweight champion. Plan C was to be the world heavyweight champion, right? That's all I had. Right?
You were focused.
Kind of have that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You have to have that focus. But looking back, you know, I could have started a side hustle, right? It's just because you have a side hustle doesn't mean that you're spending 50 hours a week on that, right? You can spend an hour or two on that, right? Or an hour or two a month even, right? There's investments that you can make and stuff that you can start that isn't that demanding. So anyway, fast forward April of that year, didn't renew my contracts. And now I'm a wrestler in another country. Not many skill sets. Don't want to do carpentry for no way. Don't want to do 9-to-5. Like, what am I going to do? Yeah? And then on top of that, I've got this $2,600 a month mortgage payment. So what happened was I was like, all right, I can't sell this house. I love this house. I just bought it, right? Like, I've kind of lost my job and my dream. I can't sell this house that I love as well because it would have been just like a bridge too far. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Mentally, psychologically, it was just would have been too much. So I went down the rabbit hole trying to understand how you find a tenant, how you screen a tenant, how you manage that tenant, right? Because we were managing the property itself. And that led me to like, I don't know if you guys have heard of Bigger Pockets.
Yeah, Bigger Pockets is awesome. Yeah.
That's opened this whole world of real estate investing to me. And I was like, wow, okay, I could do this. I could understand it. And I think from, even though I hated carpentry, I was around that business and the construction business. And it just, you know, it just made sense to me, right? More than stock markets, more than starting my own business. I just understood that real estate was a vehicle that I could use. And as things developed, I've understood that more and more and more. And just, I absolutely love real estate. For nothing else, if it could just create a lifestyle for yourself, right? It can create whatever you want. Like, life is amazing, right? So I'm hopefully speaking to your audience here, because with a side hustle or whatever, you can create whatever life you want for yourself, right? That's one thing I really realized in the last few years. It's just nuts. Like, you have that control to be like, be whatever you want to be, right? Like, however you want your life to be. Now, I'm not saying it can happen in 5 minutes, but if you put 10 years of hard work into something, or even 5 years sometimes, you can create a crazy life for yourself that is just all in your control and whatever you want it to look like. So,
Have you met any of the guys that run Bigger Pockets?
No.
Okay, no. So Brandon's the founder.
Yeah, I know who they are. Yeah, I've just not met them. Yeah,
I met him in Denver, and I could tell you this: You would fit in with them. I would not, because he took his group from their base and they moved everybody out to Hawaii. That's where they work from. That's where they all live. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty sweet gig.
Yeah.
Work from your laptop in Hawaii. But they're all like 6'6 or taller.
Oh,
they are skyscrapers.
You guys could start at, yeah.
I know. I said, Brandon, I got no hope in moving this Hawaii with you guys, I guess, since I'm only like 6'1".
The cool thing about him as well is that not only is he super successful, but he's managed to design, like talking about designing your life, right? He wanted to live in Hawaii. So he's bought what they call a house hack. He's bought a duplex, I think, or a triplex, a property that has more than one unit in it, right? So he lives in one side, rents out the other side, and he's living in Hawaii in this $1 million property. And he's like, he's not living for free, I don't think, but he's living much cheaper and living a lifestyle that he maybe couldn't live otherwise, right? So it just goes back to, again, like you can design whatever life you want for yourself. Just
be intentional and have a vision.
Exactly.
Look, yes. You know what I like, what he's saying here, going all the way back to when he was a kid in Wales, right? You wanted more for yourself. It always seemed like you had this desire, and it's not in everybody, right? Not everybody can be, you know, not everybody can dreams to be something else. They don't have the vision, right? And sometimes they don't even have the direction, right?
They lack the confidence, or
they get complacent, right? Like a lot of the people that you grew up around, I mean, they were like, hey, this is my lot in life. This is what I'm going to do. And you're like, no, this isn't for me. I want to go to Liverpool and hit the club. You know, I want to get out of this town and I want to go do bigger things, right? And I think that's almost like it's just in some people. It's not in everybody, but it's in some people. And not only that, you were disciplined. You started working out. You realized the assets you had, which was your body. And you leveraged that, right? Because a lot of people are going to hear this and they're going to say, well, I'm not, you know, 6 foot, almost 300 pounds of muscle. You know, I can't be a wrestler. I can't, he was born that way. But you leveraged your talents. And everybody has something. Everybody has some kind of talent. Everybody has some physical trait or mental ability, or they have something, but it's becoming aware of that, right? How do you become aware of that and then use that for something? And I think you discovered it early, it sounds like.
Yeah, man, that's so true. Everyone has a skill, right? I'm like, I may be tall and kind of had the ability to be big, right? But like, it's not like I'm anything special outside that. Really, I'm not at all, right? Maybe I have a good work ethic to some degree, but like everyone has something, right? There's always something you can do. And like you said, like the people that I grew up with as well, they had massive limiting beliefs, right? Oh, I couldn't do that. Oh, I don't want to do that. Oh, that's like blah, 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 you know? And I think a lot of people, unfortunately, have that limiting belief, you know? And I think if you can just get rid of those limiting beliefs to start off with, that's just huge, right? And how do you do that, right? It's easy to say, well, get rid of your limiting beliefs. One thing for me I've realized is proximity to other people, right? Is like, if you're surrounded by people, no, don't, you can't do that. Oh, that's dangerous. Oh, no, you don't want to do that. Oh, like, this is really hard, right? You're always fighting that battle, right? And you know, if you have family and friends, and I'm not saying cut people out, but you also want the people like, oh my God, I did that. Yeah, I have a friend who did 10X that, right? I have people that's doing that now, right? Surround yourself with that people, right? I think that's a big thing that I've learned as well along the journey is that surround yourself with people doing what you want to do, right?
Positive people.
I'm not saying cut out other people, because there's friends and family that you have to keep around, right? And they mean well. They all mean well, but they just have that limiting belief, and just they can portray that on you, and they can really bog you down with that, right? I just remember when I started wrestling, like, I kept wrestling to myself, right? I was going to wrestling chamber, but I didn't tell people because it was just like, kind of, this is the reaction was, oh, you do wrestling, huh? You know what I mean? It was like a snigger, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it was just like, oh, you do that fake stuff. Oh, so you try and pretend to fight. You try, like, you know, and it's like, okay,
it's just not
cool,
worth,
you
it's
know,
it's
like,
just not
yeah,
worth dealing with the bullshit.
Yeah.
You can't let that get into your head. And it did affect me. I'd be lying to say if it didn't like negatively affect me, but I had a vision and a goal, I guess, to some extent. I didn't know what that looked like, but I had, you know, a vision of more. And you just got to be so careful. You got to guard that, right? You've got to protect yourself against that if you want
to. But also the self-discipline that it takes to get in the type of shape that you were in to even wrestle in the first place. I mean, you had to build this self-discipline. But that self-discipline that you did for that one goal, your first goal of being a wrestler, that carries over into your real estate stuff now. You have the discipline.
So.
It's in you now.
And I think it's, and you can train discipline. And I think for me, for working out, I loved it. I really enjoyed it. You know what I mean? For a lot of people working, I was like, oh, I'm going to go to the gym today. I really loved it. Like, it was just, I was so excited to go to the gym. It was just like awesome. Every day, finish work, go to the gym. Or if I was wrestling, I'd go to, like, I just loved it. It was just something. Now the diet, no, I didn't love that. Did not enjoy that. I grew up just eating shit. You know, my family would give me a lot of unhealthy food growing up, chocolate cakes and stuff like that. But the working out, I loved. And I think it's, you know, with the side hustle, right? This is what we're talking about here. If you're going to pick something, right? Even if you think it's can make you a lot of money, if you don't love it, if you're doing it just because you think, oh, I can make a lot of money with this, it's going to be really hard, right? You want to pick something that you love, right? It's like, oh, yeah, I can't wait to do this. Oh, this is your, and we all have passions, right? This is something that we all are interested in, this stuff that we all love, right? I don't think there's a single person that just, I don't love anything.
So you have to, you have to be willing to suffer for your art, basically.
Right. Yeah.
It's just, so you're so passionate and you love it so much that you're willing to suffer to make it happen.
Well, nobody was going to go to the gym for you. Right, there's no pill. Right. I mean, I guess there is a pill. You can tell you. I mean,
there's quite a few of them actually.
But like, I mean, you still got to work. Like, you still got to work. I mean, even actually my buddy, he goes to all natural tournaments and everything. He's my trainer and he goes to these all natural tournaments. And he said in the gym, there's a respect. Like if you're like juicing in the gym, just say you're juicing. And he said, everybody will have respect because you got a different goal than I've got. Right. He's like, I'm going to all natural. You're going to something else. He was like, but in the community, like everybody's cool. Like, it's just like, just be honest, be who you are, you know, and that's part of the community that he belongs to. But, you know, you still got to do the work. Like, everybody has to come in and do the work. It doesn't matter. Like, you can't just all of a sudden, you know, look like that.
Well, that's why I love Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, because when we roll, you can tell who's been coming to class and who's been training, mm-hmm. who's been watching videos and who has not, because it's like, you may think that you're like at a certain level and you deserve a certain stripe, but you're getting your ass kicked by everybody mm-hmm. because you're not prepared. Either you drink too much or I'm talking completely about my own personal experience here. You either drink too much or you miss too many classes or whatever. And then they beat the shit out of me.
But think about that. Like, you automatically get checked. Like, your ego gets checked immediately. Like,
there's no faking the pecking order.
No, if you don't do the work, you get beat up. Like, that's, it happens immediately, right?
There's a pain relationship with like not being prepared.
But what is the punishment if you're just a regular Joe and you're failing at things? Like, there is no like immediate punishment really. Like, you continue to just kind of get worse and worse and worse over time, you know? And then eventually it's too late to do anything, right? Like, if you don't work out, you don't see results. If you don't train, you get beat up.
And if you don't have the passion, when you start getting beat down a little bit, you don't have the resilience. You don't have the resiliency to bounce back and keep going towards your goal.
But I could just go and get a 9-to-5 job and it'll beat me up over time. But it's not going to, I'm not going to suffer immediately from it. Actually, I can still buy a house. I can still buy a car. I can go into debt. Like, I could do all these things, but slowly over time, it's going to beat you down. It doesn't beat you down right away. But what it does do over time is it takes your options away. And I think one thing that you did, you leveraged what you had, you leveraged your wrestling career, and then turned that into something else. And I love hearing these stories of athletes like Roger Staubach, right? Roger Staubach, he's a guy from Cincinnati, mm-hmm. you know, awesome quarterback. He's like one of the wealthiest sports athletes of all time. Because once his football career was over, and they weren't getting paid a lot of money.
Bro, even in the off seasons. In the off seasons, he was working for the development company. So he was in, do you know who he is? Are you familiar with him?
Yeah. Just, I think he's been on Bigger Pockets, I think, right? I think that's where.
Maybe.
He would have been, because he was started in the 70s when Dallas was just getting into the oil boom and blew up with the city and developed. Actually, TQL, our building up in Batavia, our big-ass headquarters, he was the development company that we used.
Yeah. But it's like, I love hearing these stories about athletes who turned their career, because it's a short thing. It's, you know, the average NFL player, I think their career is only 3 years, but you think as soon as you get that signing bonus and you get, you know, you're making, you know, a million plus a year, oh, this is it. Like, I'm rich now. I got a million plus. Right. But a lot of these kids don't come from areas where they know how to handle money. They don't know how to use money and they lose it all. But you, and probably a lot of people that you know from, I mean, you probably know both sides of it. I mean, you've seen it all probably.
Yeah, yeah, and that's really unfortunate as well. Like, these guys who make it in the WWE, we make nothing like the NFL, right? You make good money. I'm not going to say that we don't, but it's nothing like what they make in the NFL. It's not really, unless you're some of the top guys, you're not making millions, you know? So I don't want anyone to make millions. I wish I did. I really wish I did. But it's so sad to see these NFL guys, right? And it's their background, right? So it's two things, right? One is their background that's probably led them to where they are, because they have that hunger, that drive, that determination, that work ethic, right? That fearlessness. But then it kind of brings them down, right? Because they don't have that financial literacy, right? They have these entourages, they buy 20 cars, they buy five houses, you know, $10 million houses, whatever it is, right? And it's really unfortunate because they've come from nothing and they get there and they create this life for themselves, you know, and they've worked their asses off, right? And sacrificed and done all this stuff, and then they lose it all. It's really sad. And yeah, you see it a little bit in wrestling. Luckily, I think one of my skills was I was frugal. You know, I wasn't cheap, but I was frugal. I always watched my money. Again, I'm not too sure whether, because my parents aren't like that. My parents are quite spendy, but I always watched money. Like when we would travel, I would always try and, you know, because you get your own hotels, you get your own rental cars. They pay for flights.
So do you get a per diem? Do you get a per diem? Do you get a per diem where they?
No. So food. So I was always watching that. So yeah, I definitely did try and leverage what I have. But you know, really, I think I was lucky that I was frugal, because again, I didn't have a plan B. Right, it took a while for me to turn into a real estate investor. Right, it wasn't like boom, I had this portfolio when wrestling came to an end. I had a house that wasn't an investment. Right, I bought a house as an emotional buy. Right, there was no zero investment behind it. So then I did have to transition, right? You know, the skill sets that you have, right, as an entertainer, as an athlete, right, because training and all that stuff and being dedicated and, you know, having goals and stuff like that, that does help you. So, you know, I was able to leverage those stuff. But there's plenty of people that have skills, right? I'm not an IT guy whatsoever. I still struggle to use the computer, to be honest, you know, and typing up, like doing a lot of that stuff isn't easy for me, right? I can do it, right? I'm not saying that I'm the dumbest guy in the world, but it doesn't come easy. There's, you know, people that have jobs that are super skillful in all this stuff. So there's skills that you can leverage, right? Whatever you're doing, right? There's always skills that you have, right? That, you know, and even people that, I don't know, do something that they don't think that they have that many skills. They have different skills. We all have skills. I don't care who you are. We all have skills that you can leverage, right? And I think going back to what you said there, that's so interesting about the jiu-jitsu, right? There's no hiding, right? Yeah. When you go on the mat, there's no hiding, right? You're exposed. But the problem, like you said, with life is you can be working a job that you hate or don't really enjoy and not really creating a life for yourself that is possible. And then next minute you're 60 and you know what I mean? And maybe your retirement isn't what it should be and your life has passed you by and you wished you'd have traveled more. You wished you'd have spent more time with your kids. You know, and that's the price, right? That's the price of that, right? In jiu-jitsu, you get out there and you get tapped. You find out quick, right? You get tapped out or you get choked out, whatever it is, right? But in life, you can get away from you. And life is, like, I'm 39 now, right? It's not that I'm that old, but I'm not that young. And it's like, man, life goes by so quick. Like, when I look at the number 39 on the piece of paper, it's so weird to me that that's my age. Like, I don't feel 39. Maybe physically I do, but mentally I don't, right? It's like, how am I 39? And it just happened in a blink of an eye. And life happens in a blink of an eye. Like 80 years might seem like a long time when you think about it, but it's really not, right? And like, I think it's one of the biggest regrets that people have when they ask people on their deathbed is that they didn't do more, right? That they didn't enjoy life more, yes. Right? Do you know what I mean? And you don't want to be that person. And going back to what I said before, we have that control, right? This is just so nuts to me. We have that control, right? And I think it's unfortunate because it goes back to that limiting beliefs that people have that they can do more of this, you know, the W-2 route. You work up the corporate ladder. That's the way you go back even further to be successful, right? This is successful to most people. You go to university, get into a great university, get a great degree, come out with $100,000, $200,000 a student debt, get a great job, work for the next 4 or 5 years paying that up. Then you work until you're 59 and a half and hope that you've put enough in your 401k that nothing happens in the stock, that nothing's happened in the stock market. And all that time you're living for the weekend, you get 2 weeks a year for vacation, you know, and then you get to 59 and a half and then hopefully you can enjoy the rest of your life. Well, at 59 and a half, it's not that you're old, but that's not what you want to enjoy life, right? You want to still enjoy life at that time. But when you're in your 20s and your 30s and your 40s, that's when you want it, because you're young, you're healthy, you have energy, you have young kids, like all that stuff, right? That's when you want to enjoy life, right? You don't want to keep postponing it, right? Because that's what you're doing, right? You're like, oh yeah, when I get to 59 and a half, I'll get to retire and it's going to be amazing. I'm going to have all this money and blah, blah, blah. No, start now. Why not now? Now is the best time to start. Doesn't matter what your age, you're 20 or you're 50. Now is the best time to start.
The two of the most influential men in my life retired and died within like 4 months of retirement. My dad and my uncle. So I don't.
That's painful. Yeah.
Yeah, retirement's not what something that I'm like dreaming about. I think that the perfect life is never retiring, honestly, but never working for somebody, never working for anything but yourself. So my uncle Tim, for example, has a great retirement set up. He works when he wants to. They've got the retirement savings to do whatever they want. He retired when he was like 52. So did his wife. They've got an awesome house, swimming pool, awesome bar. When you come up to, if you ever come up to your property in Covington, I'll show it to you.
Okay, awesome.
It's right by Covington, and so he, that's the perfect. So he's been healthy. He's been able to do whatever he wants to do. They travel all the time. He goes. He's fiercely Irish. Last name's O'Hara, so he goes to Ireland all the time. And that's like to me, that's the perfect retirement because he still works. You know, he still does side stuff. He'll do drywall and some remodeling stuff. He'll work for Cincinnati Stagehands when they're allowed to have concerts again, things of that nature. But he's not obligated to be at an office, or he's not obligated to be working from home. There's no obligation. It's personal freedom. So that's kind of like what my thought process is with my investing and with what I do with what I'm going to do with real estate is I want to have no obligation. I want to do it, and it just fills my day because I hate golf, and I would be a fierce drinker, I guess, if I was bored doing nothing all day long. So that's my keeping myself sane and alive strategy for my 45 and older life is just visiting my buildings and checking out my businesses and making sure that everything's running smooth, and then pick up my daughter from school and go do something fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, technically, I guess I could retire right now too, but I'd be bored. I'd be real bored.
You need the drama.
I need drama. Like I grew up in a neighborhood where there's this action every day. You know, something happened, you know, or whatever. And
he's running for mayor of Cincinnati. I don't know if you knew that or not.
No, I did not. That's awesome.
Yeah, we'll see how that happens. I mean, I just, you know, at this point, you know, I want other people to be successful. Like I grew up in a pretty bad neighborhood. We didn't have any money at all. I mean, about as poor as you can get in America outside of like living in a coal mine in Eastern Kentucky somewhere, you know, for an urban person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the things that helped me along my journey, I think were just positive education, you know, going to the school I went to. It's one of the few schools in the Cincinnati Public School District where everyone graduates. And, you know, overall, it's a 40% dropout rate, something like that in the Cincinnati Public Schools. But everyone at my school had some sort of artistic talent. It was the School for the Graving, Form, and Arts. What's her name from Sex and the City went there?
Oh, Sarah Jessica Parker.
Nick Lachey, a bunch of people. There's a lot of people who've come out of that school and done really well.
98 Degrees was right up your alley, wasn't it?
98 Degrees, that was your stuff, right?
Isn't that what you used to work out to and where else?
Always got me psyched up, yeah.
But everyone had a dream to do something, right? And then you go to one of these regular high schools and nobody knows what they want to do, right? Nobody has a talent. Like my talent, like your talent, was your physical abilities. My talent was my artistic ability, right? And I was able to use that and leverage that in a similar way that you did. And now I own an advertising agency and I started a startup in the real estate industry. And, you know, that's what I've been able to leverage my talent to do. But, you know, one of my goals now, I think, is to show other people, I mean, via this podcast and potentially if I become mayor, show other people that there's things that they could do and be a positive reassurance to those folks any way that I can, like whatever's in my power, I want to do that. Right. But I feel like there's so much negativity now, like in America, when it comes to, you know, finance and when it comes to people's ability to overcome and do things. You've got, I feel like, a lot of people in this country who are dissuading others from trying, and they're giving people this false hope that there's this great socialism or whatever that's going to happen that's going to give you all this free stuff. And it's disingenuous, in my opinion. It makes people not try. The more you tell them that the government's going to help them or this is going to help them or whatever's going to happen for them, They've been telling me that since I was in junior high school. I remember hearing things like that. College is going to be paid. All your health care is going to be paid. Never happened, right? It's almost it gives desperate people false hope. And I think instead of telling people that that stuff's going to happen, we need to constantly be reassuring people that to work hard and to try new things and to, you know, look intrinsically at what their skills are and then build on those and then give them the tools to be able to do that, right?
Give them empowerment, because people feel when they don't feel like they have power to change their surroundings, then that's when they get desperate. But if you give them the tools to empower themselves, like we're trying to do, like that's how you change communities.
I mean, you got the internet everything. Now. We didn't have the internet like that when we were kids. You know, we couldn't just look up to figure out how to be a plumber or an electrician or whatever. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with those. Like, we need more of those people. And you could be crazy successful at that stuff. You don't have to go to a 4-year school.
I'm like him. I could YouTube till all night long, and I'll suck at putting, like, I had destroyed a toilet the other day just trying to switch out.
I don't touch it. Yeah. Just pay professionals to do
that.
Put
the tools
right?
in my hand is like the only thing that's going to happen is me going to the hospital.
But the whole real estate thing for you, was it Bigger Pockets that opened that up? And how did you find that? I mean, you were just kind of browsing the internet and it came up, or what made you? I know you had the house in Tampa, right? And you're like, well, I'm leaving. I don't want to sell it. This is an asset. I need to do something with this. How did you find the Bigger Pockets, and what made you want to go into this real estate thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. And just going back to what you're saying as well, I think that's where education to people is important, because I think a lot of people, they don't realize what's available, right? Like you said, like people are struggling. People are, you know, they want socialism and they want money for free. But I think a lot of people also, they don't realize what their options are, right? And it doesn't need to be real estate, right? It can be some kind of side hustle, it can be some kind of business, it could be entrepreneurship, right? In general, right? It's just, I don't think they know it's there, right? Because everyone else around them, right? When you're in a goldfish bowl, right? And everyone is swimming in one direction, right? You only know that's it. You can only swim in the same direction because that's all you know. So I think like platforms like yours, hopefully platforms like mine, my podcast as well, hopefully educates and opens people. And there's more information. That's the great thing about the internet now. There's more information than ever, right? It could also be a problem, right? That's more information than ever as well. That's always kind of being a problem. But going back to your question about real estate, I think there's a few things. I think one, my great granddad built a 3-unit, a triplex. My granddad built a triplex when I was a kid. I remember going there, which is 3 units for people who don't know. It's just a 3-flat, 3-unit type building. I remember going there with my dad and they were painting and stuff. So I remember being that. Then when I was older, my dad and his brother built another 3 units. So I think, you know, in my local little town. So I remember being around that. So I think being around the construction, being around that, seeing that somewhat planted a seed. But I think what what it was for me as well is I was looking for something. So WWE comes to an end and I was trying to figure out my life, and real estate made sense, right? It just could make sense to me because it's just simple to understand, right? Now there's sophistication in real estate, of course, but it's not like the stock market. I mean, essentially if you're buying rental real estate, you buy a property, you put a rental tenant in there, a person to rent it out. And then hopefully if you've done your analysis right, you make some cash flow, right? That's the basics of it, right? There's a lot more that goes into it than that. And I just like the simplicity of it. So I think, yeah, when I was looking to find a tenant, I think I stumbled across Bigger Pockets because I probably put in how to screen a tenant or something like that in Google. And then probably I imagine Bigger Pockets came up and I kind of started reading them. I was like, wait a minute. You know what I mean? Like,
there's strategy behind this. Yeah.
Yeah. And every step I would go, yeah. And then it'd be like, wait, you know, you can buy a bunch of properties and you can, you know, you can do this and you can do that. And it was like, wow, it just opened my eyes. But I think ultimately what attracted it more than anything to me was start off with having that family history, I think, that was in me somehow that I didn't know. And then also just the simplicity of it to some extent. And I know real estate isn't simple, but it makes a lot more sense to me than the stock market. So I think it was those things more than anything.
What's your portfolio now?
I have 6 units in Covington, Kentucky.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wonder how far it is from your studio.
We're hot right now.
Where are you at?
Yeah. It's on Girard Street, Licking River area.
You're two streets over from me, from where we're at right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Probably close. Yeah. Yeah. Covington is awesome. I love Covington. I kind of stumbled into it. I knew the property was a good deal, but I think Covington is really changing for the better. I think I'm a big fan of Covington. I think it's going to continue to improve. And
it's happening organically, too. It's not like a big development company's coming through here and
We're not big yet.
Yeah, but it's literally, it's like the Brooklyn of Cincinnati. It's in another state. You know, it's not like Brooklyn's not another state, but it's another state. But it's very, it's got that bohemian, it's across a body of water, but it's that bohemian kind of culture a little bit over here. And it's a little gritty, right? But it's great real estate. I mean, how many, you know, where else are you going to go to find, you know, a house on the water for a reasonable price where you're not even five, you can walk downtown Cincinnati in 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where did you, like, how did you stumble across property in Covington?
So what happened with me was I started looking at properties in Las Vegas. And so I had three properties. I had the one property in Florida, and then I bought two properties in Las Vegas. And my goal initially was to get to 40 single family homes, because I'd read and heard that you've start with the end in mind, right? What is the number that you need to hit for you to have financial freedom? And that's your goal. So mine was 100,000 a year. And I figured I needed 40 single family properties to get to that point. Right. And at this point in my career, I also didn't realize there was all this creative financing and different ways that you could buy property. So I was going to buy four properties a year for the next 10 years, right? Which would get me to 40 units. And three of those every year was going to be 20% down. One was going to be owner occupied, and I could get in with 5% down. So at the time, I'm trying to figure all my finances, my wife's finances, how can I save every last penny so that I have enough, you know, to buy these four properties a year? I'm trying to figure it all out. And, you know, the problem with buying, not the problem, but buying 40 single family homes, that's 40 different transactions, 40 different inspections, 40 different loans. And you don't just look at one property and buy it, right? You probably analyze 10, 15, 20 properties to get there. So it was going to be a lot of work. And I wasn't scared of it, but I met someone one day and they were like, hey, you know, you can invest in multifamily properties, right? And apartment complexes, and essentially get to 40 units in one deal.
Like, boom. Yeah.
I was like, I remember literally where I was sitting and standing at, where I was sitting at, and who I was talking to, where I was, because it just was that, I don't know if it was life changing moment, but it was such an aha moment in my head where I just went, wow. Like, just so amazed by it. And I fell in love with multifamily for a number of reasons. The scalability, the fact that if you have, you know, a number of tenants, if one leaves, you're not 100% occupied. The ability to force appreciation because it's valued. It's not a value like single family homes on comparables. Like, so if Mrs. Jones down the street decides to sell a home for cheap, it affects the value of your home. It's valued on that income approach. So it's valued on what the cash flow is essentially on that.
Exactly.
Property. So if you're able to increase the rents, lower the expenses, you increase the value of that property. So I did that, started looking in Vegas, was like, okay, prices are kind of expensive, but I guess it works. And then eventually it's like, it's just so expensive. It just doesn't make sense. Now, looking back, this was 2 or 3 years back. I wish I'd have bought everything I laid my eyes on then, because it's probably doubled in value.
Oh, my God. Then. I know. It's crazy.
Because Vegas market's on fire.
Henderson, it's right? Like, is that what it is? Like, yeah, that's where everybody kind of lives.
Las Vegas and Henderson. Yeah, Henderson's kind of a city of Las Vegas, but the side of Las Vegas. But I was like, this doesn't make sense. So I also had a real estate coach. I'd hired a real estate coach because I realized multifamily makes sense, but there's a lot that can go wrong with
it. Who's your coach?
Joe Fales.
Dude.
Joe Fales was on our podcast.
He's my mentor too.
Yeah, he's his mentor. Get out of here. He's in Cincinnati.
Yeah, he lives here. So Joe Fales, trying to pick another market. My coach, hey, Joe, where should I go? I'd like stability. It's like, have you looked at Cincinnati? No. Looked at Cincinnati and really liked Cincinnati. So that's picked Cincinnati as a market because it's a lot more stable, right? You don't get crazy job growth and create, you know, population growth there. But what you do is get stability, right? What I always hear is people don't necessarily leave Cincinnati so much, right?
So we don't go down. Like if Vegas, all of a sudden, like look at what's happened with the casinos and everything. And now wait till these foreclosures start hitting Vegas. It's going to get crazy. Yeah. You know, markets like LA, you know, where essentially Newsom's now going to essentially steal everyone's property from them because he put in some kind of law where the government actually gets first crack at any foreclosures. So what's he doing now, right? Like everybody there is, you know, they're forgiving rents, but you still got to pay your mortgage. So those people, there's going to be a lot of foreclosures. Guess who gets first crack at it? State of California. So they're going to start scooping up properties. But those markets get hit really hard. New York, those kind of places. And, you know, 2008, those were the ones that got hit the hardest. Cincinnati doesn't feel anything.
Yeah.
Like we barely, and nothing happens. Like it forgets us.
That's exactly why I wanted it, because, like, again, going back to why I like multifamily, if you're able to increase the income, lower the expenses, you increase that cash flow. It's called net operating income is what they call it.
Is your building on the corner of 5th and Girard?
Yeah, it's 520. It's not on the corner. It's like,
okay. There's one on one on the corner a couple of years ago, and I was thinking about it, and then it was gone before I had a chance to think about it.
Yeah.
I only bought in January of last year.
Okay.
Yeah, but I really like that area. Apart from it being a historic area, that I had to pay $12,000 for box cutters, which was so painful. So you've got to replace with a historic area for people who don't know.
Yeah.
You've got to replace what's already there, and it's historic. So it's normal guttering isn't good enough. Maybe your audience knows what box guttering is. I never heard of it before until I bought there. We don't have it in Vegas or Florida. So box guttering is all stuff. So I had to replace it. So it was $6,000 a piece each side. And I was like, oh.
Because you got to find people that can do it.
It's expensive, and it's not just guttering. You've got to replace the woodwork of this box guttering, right? So I had to replace everything. So that was a tough
shock.
But it wasn't a nice thing. But so going back, Cincinnati doesn't really crazy go up, but it doesn't really go down. So I knew if I could have that control of that NOI, that net operating income, I would be in good position. So I like, that's why I picked Cincinnati. And I think it's a really cool city. You know, there's a lot of healthcare there. There's seven of the Fortune 500 companies there. Amazon is
huge hub. Yeah.
Yeah.
DHL. Yeah.
You know, and it's a landlord and also a landlord friendly state, right? You know, if someone doesn't pay in normal circumstances, you can get them out in around 30 days. And I think evictions and stuff is happening pretty normally there now. So you can, you know, if someone doesn't pay rent or whatever, they're causing trouble, and I think it's easy to get out.
Kentucky and Cincinnati, our governments aren't, or in Ohio, our governments aren't very heavy handed, especially Kentucky. Kentucky, people think it's very Republican, but I think it's more libertarian. Just leave me alone. Let me do my thing. If somebody doesn't live up to their end of the bargain, they're out. You know,
right.
That's just kind of the way it is. I mean, you know, it's a handshake state is what it kind of is here.
Let me ask you this, because I always hear. So I've talked a lot about Cincinnati, but my property is in Covington, Kentucky, right? Is there like a lot of rivalry between?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, so Adam can't speak to this because he's from Cincinnati. But I can tell you, growing up in Northern Kentucky my whole life, Cincinnati doesn't want us. The rest of Kentucky doesn't want us. We're kind of our own little community, and it really is that we're too city for the rest of the state, because Lexington and Louisville, well, really Louisville, dominates the politics of the rest of the state with the exception of us because of our population base. And people think that the Ohio River is like the difference that's like the gates to heaven. I can assure you that Ohio is as big a dump state as Kentucky is a big as dump state. There's just as many hillbillies and rednecks in Ohio as there are in Kentucky.
It's the biggest. They call the Ohio River the Ohio Ocean. Because it's almost like it's too much to cross, right?
No, I'm serious. I hate it. We bought buildings in Fort Thomas, two pieces of shit, and we renovated them, and we brought in an ice cream shop and a restaurant, and we specifically designed it like it would have been in this place called Hyde Park, because I knew that people from my area of Northern Kentucky, literally 5-minute drive from Hyde Park, would not drive to Hyde Park because they would have to cross the bridge. I mean, I understood the mentality, and I banked $40,000 down payment on it. I was like, I know that people are going to come here because they want that. They want the cool little boutique type feel, the sole proprietor, something different that they're not going to get anywhere else. But they sure as hell don't want to park in Cincinnati to get it. Now, it's getting better. People are getting more adventurous and venturing across the state lines. But yeah, it's.
I would actually argue Kentucky people are more old world fancy. It's bourbon, it's horse racing, it's, you know, it's, I think you get more classy people in Kentucky than we do in Ohio. Like I would argue that.
You're being disingenuous.
No, but also when you cross the river and you get to Ohio, you've got the east side and the west side. So like my side of town is the west side, which is more, everybody's German Catholic here, right? So cheap, just imagine how cheap we are, right? Everybody's like, pinching pennies. But on my side of town, it's people that have been like the same people that, you know, floated up the river to found Cincinnati. Those people's like their ancestors or their people still live in the west side. Like nobody leaves the west side. So it's almost like nobody leaves Kentucky to cross the river. Nobody leaves the west side to go even downtown unless it's maybe to a Bengals game or a Reds game every once in a while. But the east side people are much more transient. So you're going to get P&G executives, folks like that live on the east side. and probably better, more reliable renters, where the reliable people on the West Side already own homes. And the ones that rent will destroy your stuff. Like, that's just the way it is. And I've rented, like, that's how I, where all my rental properties are. And I've dealt with a lot of crazy stuff. A lot of drug addicts breaking into my property, stealing my copper, stealing my electric, things like that. I've had to foreclose on properties because of it, because I'm so underwater on them. But right now, I literally drove past a four family on Queen City Avenue the other day. The sign must have just went up yesterday. I called my realtor. I said, we need to get that. She said, there's already three offers and your best offer is due tonight. We have the second shortest time on market in the country right now, Cincinnati. Omaha, Nebraska is number one. We were number one last month. Now Omaha, Nebraska took us over, but second fastest on market, because I can buy that four family for $160,000 on the West Side. My mortgage payment will be $500. I can rent each one of those one bedrooms out for about $700. So I'm making $2,400 and I only have to pay, say, after taxes and everything, maybe $650. So that's the kind of cash flow you're dealing with, and out-of-state investors are starting to realize, wow, this is super profitable. Like, you can't get cash flow like that on a place in LA. I mean, you're hoping that they'll pay your mortgage for you, but it sounds like to me you're not just an investor who's buying to get equity, but you're looking for cash flow.
Yeah, a little bit of both. So this initially, that was my goal. This is only six units that I own there, but I wanted something 20 units. The idea was to buy for cash flow, right? To build that return, to get to, you know, the portfolio to where I'm making 100 grand a year, right? That's kind of the big goal, right? And probably when I get there, I'll probably have a bigger goal than that, right? That's a good thing.
Exactly.
You smash it, you can get to bigger ones. But with this six unit, it was more of a flip just because of the opportunity. I wanted, you know, to about 20 units just because six units isn't going to throw off that much cash flow, but it's about the same work as, you know, if you buy a six unit that doesn't need work, or you buy a 20 unit that doesn't need work, it's not that much different, right? You put a property manager in, it's still one loan, it's still one inspection, right? It's, you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. not that much more work. But this six unit, all the units needed to be completely renovated, but there was a lot of value on it. There seems to be a lot of, so we just did a quick analysis and we thought we could sell it for 500 easily. Actually, I think there was a property down the street that was selling for 500 and I bought it for 300 and we guesstimated, you know, just did some numbers quickly, that maybe if we put 100 in, right? And that's a lot, right? 100 grand in, I would still walk away with 100 grand worth of equity.
Wow.
So it's like, all right, this is a no-brainer. Now, the good thing is rents have been really driving up there since I bought it a year ago.
Yes.
I was predicting 1,000 for a two-bed and 800 for a one-bed. Well, now I've been getting 1,250 for a two-bed, and hopefully I'm going to get 9950. I've got a one bedroom for rent right now. 9950 for a one bedroom. And I've made them nice. I have made them nice, but I'm not talking stainless steel and granite in all of them. A couple of them I experimented with that, but it didn't need that. So rents. So I'm hoping I can sell it for 650, maybe even 700. We'll see. If there's buyers listing, it's 750.
Yeah.
Are you?
So it was essentially a flip. That's what, but what I also knew and what I realized as well, when you start investing, and there's all kinds of different theories, all kinds of different ways. But to me, what I realized was that I didn't have the equity and the money to create $100,000 a year in, right? So if you're looking at a 10% return, you need $1 million invested to get to 100 grand a year, right? And I was nowhere near that, right? Nowhere near that. So I also realized that I needed to focus on creating equity. Cash flow is good, right? I'm not saying that, but I didn't want to buy a property in Memphis, Tennessee that I buy for $30,000 that rents for $600, right? Because yeah, I can make some cash flow, but that property is always going to be worth $30,000.
Exactly.
Right?
It's never going up.
Maybe in 10 years it's worth $31,000, but that cash flow isn't that big, right?
It gets wiped out after one bad tenant when you're buying a $30,000 building.
100%.
Point, right? Yep. Yeah, you get someone that trashes the place.
Yeah.
So that I knew early on that wasn't what I wanted to go. And there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, you get 50 of those type of properties, I'm sure you're doing great, right? I'm sure your cash flow is fantastic. But I wanted to focus. If I buy a cash flow property, like 20 units, that's great, right? And I can increase the value maybe a little bit, but I can increase the cash flow. But with this six unit, it was an equity play. And hopefully it's going to be a really good equity play in terms of the flip, in terms of creating that equity. So then I can reinvest that. I'm going to sell it, hopefully, in the next few months and do what they call a 1031 exchange. I'm
sure you're familiar with that.
But maybe you have...
Yeah, explain it.
It's a 1031 is exchange where you defer the gains. I'm not a CPA. I'm not giving...
financial advice.
Yeah, whatsoever. It's just... just a wrestler talking here, but it's the 1031 essentially. So we usually have to pay capital gains, right? When you sell a property, you have to pay capital gains unless you live in that property for the last two of the 5 years. And again, not putting giving accounting advice, but when you sell an investment property, you have to pay capital gains. Well, there's this thing called the 1031 exchange, or it's called a like-kind exchange, is where if you have an investment property, you buy another investment property, you could defer those gains. There's a lot of
similar investment, similar type of investment property.
Yeah. And there's a lot of intricacies in that that you should ask a CPA about how to do it properly. But essentially, you're deferring those gains. You're not getting rid of them, because if you do a 1031 into a property and then you sell that property, well, you have to pay the gains on that property and the previous property. But essentially, you can keep doing a 1031 exchange until you die, and then I think your kids can take it over and they don't have to pay any of those taxes. But it's a great way to avoid taxes, especially if you're going to hold a property for a long time. You know, you avoid paying those capital gains, because in this property, if I sell it for $6,650, I'm going to walk away with, I don't know, $300 worth of capital gains, right? And I don't want to pay whatever the capital gains, what is it, 20-30%, maybe?
Yeah,
more.
20%, yeah. I mean, if it's short-term.
No, it's going to be long-term, so it depends on, because he's already left.
Oh, no,
year.
Sorry, it's 20% if it's long-term. I think it's 15 if it's short-term.
Well, no, it's...
The other way.
Short-term is whatever your income tax level is. Mm-hmm. So whatever you make is what you would pay in short-term gains. But since he's held it for over a year and a day, it's got to be over a year. So depending on your income level, it's either 15 or 20%.
Right. It's still going to be a lot, right? Yeah. It's way too much than I wanted. So you can do what is called a 1031 exchange. So I'm going to do that, hopefully transition that into 30, 40, 50 units. I don't care about the unit counts. The return is what's more important to me. And then buy something a lot more for cash flow. But that also has some kind of way that I can increase value, because I think it's always important to increase the value of the property. Just if nothing else, if you have to sell all of a sudden, you have increased that value, right? If you just buy as a turnkey, it's fine, but you can kind of get in a little bit of trouble there. So I always want to try and create value. And if there's a lot of value, even better, right? So that's kind of what
you're also in an opportunity zone in Covington. I mean, Covington, almost the entire state of Kentucky is an opportunity zone.
Oh, really?
I did not know that. Yeah, so you could take advantage of that also.
If you find another property in Covington, you could roll it over. I don't know if you can do a 1031 exchange and do an opportunity zone fund. I don't know that.
I don't know. You'd have to talk to your tax people.
That's what needs to be clarified, because you know what the opportunity zones are, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know that you can do both. But if you could...
You are in an opportunity zone. So, I mean,
Covington, it'd be fantastic since you already know the market.
Yeah, but I think with an opportunity zone, right, and again, I'm just guessing, spouting rubbish probably here, is that you have to spend the same amount that you spend buying it and fixing it up, right? And I won't be anywhere near that, I don't think. But I don't know.
Yeah, that's one of the things. And then you get 85%. Like if you hold the investment for a certain amount of time, you only end up having to pay 85%.
90% now.
Is it 90%? Did it change?
In 2021, it changed.
So 90% of your original capital gains you have to pay after 7 years, I think.
After seven years.
But whatever you invested that money into, you don't have to pay any capital gains on that. So your next deal wouldn't be taxed.
Yeah. So if you made if you make $1 million from the sale of your new purchase, you get that's $1 million equity is tax free.
Yep. Which is awesome.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's a great, yeah.
But you got to hold on. Yeah. You got to put a lot of money into it. You got to hold on to it for a decade, or you got to transfer the money. If you sell it prior, you got to transfer it in within your fund to another qualifying property. I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. Just talk to somebody who's going to tell you.
Just anyone listening, look up 1031 exchange and look up opportunity zones. And that's
That's crazy that you like, so how did you find, so you found Joe from Bigger Pockets?
I think I was listening to his podcast. Yeah. So okay, I don't know where, cause I was consuming a lot of stuff and you listen to one podcast, maybe he was on another podcast or someone mentions that podcast and you're like, oh, let me check it out. I checked it out and yeah, I think that's how I don't know. So somewhere along the lines, maybe Bigger Pockets, maybe some kind of podcast, maybe some kind of YouTube, who knows, somewhere along those lines.
Yeah. So this is how stupid I am. I saw that he wrote an article and so I sent him an email. I was like, hey, you want to get? I'm from Cincinnati area too. You want to get lunch? And he's like, no, but you can, you could be part of this mentorship group if you want to. So I started looking up his stuff, and I was like, you know what? I need to learn about this. So I considered it a college course, and I went into it. And now we play poker together, and he was like one of our first guests on here on the podcast. And
yeah,
He's an awesome dude.
What else?
Awesome.
What else are you looking into right now? So, I mean, outside of different markets, I mean, you hear about Raleigh, North Carolina, Raleigh, Durham. You hear about Charlotte. You hear about all these. Really, Nashville, obviously, if you can find anything. Gatlinburg is a really good one around here. People like to buy down in Gatlinburg. But outside of just residential, are you looking at commercial? I mean, we have Ash Patel, who's also a friend of Joe's. And he's like, I don't mess with multifamily. I'm only doing commercial. He's a big commercial real estate guy. And industrial, when you start talking about here being, you know, Cincinnati, the supply chain logistics capital of America, I mean, industrial's killing it right now. Have you looked into any of those kind of deals, or is it just mainly residential?
Yeah, mainly multifamily and residential. Yeah, this, like, because it's easy to, for anyone listening as well, I would heed this warning, right? Because when I started, when you listen to real estate, everything sounds amazing. I had that shiny object syndrome for so long and still fight it to this day. So, but what I learned was that it's important to find one thing, I think, and some people can do a few different things, but if you just find one thing and get really good at that, focus on that, because whatever it is, right? Multifamily, industrial, tax liens, flipping, wholesaling, whatever it is, there's people that are successful, that are millionaires, that make a ton of money in that. So just focus on one thing and get good at that and really learn that thing and find something that, you know, aligns with your goals and what you're trying to achieve. So no, I've listened to industrial, and it makes complete sense to me, right? I understand the theory behind it, but I've focused, you know, my coach is a multifamily coach, right? So it just makes sense for me to stick to that. But no, definitely, I think industrial will continue to do well, right? Because like you said, right, Amazon is just massive right now, right? So crazy. If you have a warehouse that Amazon you can use, or like we just, the supply chain of just delivering stuff, and the warehouses are going to be more and more in demand, I think. I've fought that battle and I just kind of let it go.
But you have your goal. You have to meet your goal first, which was, you know, $100,000 in income off of real estate, right? Off of residential real estate.
Yeah, and the thing is that then I'd have to restart learning that, right? It's not like industrial is just this easy thing where you go, okay, I'm buying an industrial property, blah, blah, blah. There's stuff to learn just like anything else. So I'd have to restart that process, refamiliarize myself, understand how to analyze it, what are the demographics, what are good markets, like all that stuff, right? Maybe get another coach. And so it just made sense for me to stick to multifamily. So that's definitely where my focus is. But I have been focusing a little bit more on syndication. I'm looking to build my own portfolio, no doubt about it.
Oh, wow.
But I started, we have a team. So funny that you mentioned the Carolinas, right? Because we have an offer out on 63 units in the Carolinas. There's four of us that have partnered up. And we're looking at 63 units.
Are you from the Facebook group?
No. It was through my podcast. I met a gentleman, had him on the show, and he has a underwriting Zoom call that he does every Saturday.
Oh, nice.
Where he runs through the underwriting of multifamily. I just made a connection with him and two other guys, and we decided, like, hey, we want to do bigger deals. It makes sense to partner, right? Because the problem with these bigger deals, you can do them by yourselves, but it's really challenging. It's a lot of work, and you need a lot of different skill sets. So there's four of us that have different complementary skill sets, and we decided to work together. So we found this 63 unit. We think it's going to be a great deal. So hopefully that's going to be the first of many deals that we do together. So I like to do both. I have an interest in both. So people who don't know, syndication is where essentially you syndicate a deal together, where you have people that are active, that are actually putting the deal together, finding the deal, organizing the property manager, organizing the construction, coming up with a business plan, doing all that active stuff, right? And then you have other people who just want to come in and do nothing and bring that money. And then the pie is shared up between them, and everyone profits together, and everyone, you know, gets into a large deal that they normally couldn't do. So the good thing about that is that it's kind of a job, a business, you know, and you can make money doing that. But it's not that passive income and creating that nest egg for yourself, right? Because it's, you know, the hold period is between 3 and 7 years. So every, say, the average is about 5. So every 5 years, you're starting a new job, right? You go through that cycle of that property, you sell it, and then you need to find another one, and then you start again. And it's a constant job. And it's a great job. I love it. And it's really a lot of fun. But if you stop working at a job, that money stops coming in, right, essentially, right? Whereas if you build a site next, so I'm trying to do a little bit of both, build a side nest egg, a portfolio in Cincinnati or in Covington, Kentucky. So, and at the same time, create more income, more money through syndications. So doing a bit of both. And interesting, seeing as you guys are in Covington, I partnered with some people in Dayton to do a flip. So the flip's on. I think we accepted.
Dayton, Kentucky.
Ohio. Yeah,
Dayton, Ohio. Okay.
Yeah. Dayton, Ohio. Yeah. So it's way north of you guys. So mm-hmm. just through relationships again, made a part. And I'm essentially, I don't do any the construction work, as you guys probably guessed from my previous comments. But I just kind of do a lot of the financing side of that deal. We just split it 50-50. So they do the work. I bring all the financing and the money to that deal, and we split it 50, and it's going to be a great deal. And I'm just going to continue to do that as well, because I'm a fan of leveraging people, right? There's a thing, yes. Like, it's hard to do everything. So I'm also looking at taking down a couple of Airbnbs, just because I like that model and it's a great cash flow.
I was going to ask you about that, like short term. Like, are you into the short term thing right now? Or
no, kind of. But again, it's focus, right? How much time do you have in a day, and where's your focus? And you need to be focused. Like, multifamily isn't easy, right?
No.
Like, everyone could do it, but it's not easy. And you have to have a focus on that and be working towards that. And I can't have 10 million things. So the flip, I just once a week or twice a week, I'll text, hey, how's it going? Blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, yeah, this has happened. We need this. Cool. Let me get on that. Blah, blah, blah. Very easy, right? It's maybe an hour or two a week max I spend on that. And then the short-term rentals I found, I'm actually looking in Covington. There's a, I think it's called Flow Property Management Company, that they specialize in short-term rentals. So I'm going to use them. And he's a guy called Jeremiah Hines. He's a great guy, so smart when it comes to short-term rentals, understands the model, has all the system and process. So again, nice. I can leverage them.
Do you know who owns that with Jeremiah?
Don't tell me you.
No, my partner does. My cousin Joe Aspiring.
Oh, get out of here. Okay, so yeah, Jeremiah.
Great, brother, put in a good word for him.
Jeremiah's running our building that I showed you on Madison. Yeah, they're great awesome. Guys.
So take it easy on Barry with the fees.
give me a discount. So, but again, I'm leveraging them. They like, once I buy it, and they're going to advise me on how to set it up and all that stuff. So again, it's limited time, right? I can hopefully get in, get a great deal, make a good shot, let them do their work. Same in Florida. I have another guy that's really good that's going to be managing there. That's what they do. Now, they take a fee, and it's not the same. I can make more money if I do it myself, but I can still make good money, good returns, and have them do it and keep my focus on multifamily. And it's a little bit of diversification, but because again, I think it's important to have focus, right? I'm a little bit doing this other stuff, but I'm leveraging other people's skills, right? Because I don't have, if I started short-term rental, I have no idea what I'm doing now. It's like, you know, you mess up, you get bad reviews, you don't get to super host status, you don't have the system and processes in, like, people trash the place. It can go wrong, right? But these guys who are good at it, I just leverage them, and I pay them. Same with the flip, right? Could I make more money doing the flip myself, putting the money in myself? Of course, but if I'm spending an hour a week and I'm still getting a 20-30% return on my money in 2 or 3 months, and I essentially don't do anything, right? So it's about leveraging. And that's a good thing about multifamily that you could do still as well, right? Because even though I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada, we're looking at a property in Columbia, South Carolina. I have property in Covington, Kentucky, right? You leverage other people's skills, other people's abilities, and use that to buy the real estate, and you just, you know, kind of manage it all. So
it helps you grow faster. Yeah. I mean, any successful business has people. Like, what business do you know that's successful that one guy is calling all the shots? Like, it's not, you know, and you just don't have the time for it, and it's too stressful. Let other people who are more efficient, who are better at the things that you're not as good at, let them do those things. Let them be who they are. And you don't have to take all the money on every deal. I mean, this allows you to get in one deal, get out, get into another deal, and do what you do really well.
Exactly, yeah. And it's like leveraging just other those people, right? And it just, once you learn that skill as well, right, you can also create that lifestyle for yourself, right? Like, because like, I can't see myself retiring either and just doing nothing. I enjoy like my property, my 6 unit, I enjoy like giving my contractors a hard time, like, hey, wait, not enjoy, but you know what I mean, like,
yeah.
I've seen the unit once it's done, but I don't want to be there for 12 hours a day doing it, you know.
No.
it's just in the morning, get up, a few text messages, send a few emails, make a few calls if I have to, right? And it's like, again, creating that life. And some people, like, that's what's fine for me. And again, going back to creating whatever life you want for yourself, right? I enjoy that. Now, working 12 hours a day every day, no, I don't want that, right? It's not appealing to me. And some people, they love that. That's how they built, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. For the longest time, I actually had to realize who I was and not feel guilty about it. Because you can feel guilty about, like, oh, like, because I listen to podcasts, listen to books, like all this stuff. And then like, go, nonstop, like no sleep. I woke four, I slept 4 hours last night. Okay, cool. Right. But that's not for me. Right. It's not who I am. It's not what is going to make me happy. And I got to a point now where I'm still busy and I still do stuff and I'm not like sitting on the couch all day. But at the same time, I don't beat myself up about it. If I want to chill out, if I want to go for an hour's walk with my son, or I just chill with my son for 2 hours in the morning and I just play with him. And you know what I mean?
Well, you spent 20 years beating the hell out of your body. Like, you know, started going to the gym. I mean, yeah that's some work, man. But yeah, it isn't for everybody. I mean, you gotta do the work. But the good thing I think about real estate is too, you do really hard work for say several years. And then you don't have to like you said, you build a life for yourself and you do what you want after that. You start
cashing. Residual income.
The residual income. You find good property managers. You find people that can. And by the way, Cincinnati's rated an A right now on AirDNA for short-term rental because low regulation, fairly cheap prices.
Covington just put in some regulations in, so you're going to want to check that.
Yeah, Covington did put in some short-term regulations. But
last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so there is that. So, so while you're in Vegas, did you ever track down your fellow Welshman, Tom Jones, the singer?
No, does he live here?
Yeah, he's a Vegas guy.
I would love.
He's probably still performing, I think, isn't he? Or
I have no idea.
He's got to be an old man at this point, but
I've seen him on TV a few times. He still looks great. He still looks great.
Hey, he's in Vegas. Yeah, he's taking it easy.
Funny story, I don't know if I should say this, but John Cena's bus driver, so he had his bus drive, you know, that he went everywhere. It's just him and his bus. It's like a moving house, essentially. You know, the sides open up and it's a kitchen. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. I traveled it a few times, and a bed in the back and all this stuff. Mm. But his driver, that was his full-time job. I don't know how much he paid him, maybe $100,000 a year or something like that. But he used to be Chum Jones's bus driver.
No!
And he told me, and he said, even Tom Jones, like when he was in his 50s and 60s, right? I don't know if he's married or not. And not that this is going to get out, I guess, but he said that, Tom Jones would be running around with all these 21-year-old girls.
Yeah.
Back onto his bus, when he was in his 60s or whatever.
Ladies, man.
Well, there are no other options. Like, you talk about, like, I don't know what else I'm going to do with the rest of my life. When you're Tom Jones, it's all you can do is just keep finding the 24-year-olds and just keep being Tom Jones.
Yeah, you're the man. You get older, but they stay the same age, right? Mm. What was that, Matthew McConaughey?
And maybe there are different planes of heaven. Like that, this is his heaven plane, and then you transfer off into something else. I get my heaven plane, and I'll be a famous singer with a huge tour bus and lots of hot girls.
That's awesome, man. Well, Barry, we don't want to eat up your whole day.
Tough life, huh?
Yeah.
We really appreciate your time and what you've, helping us to motivate people. And, you've obviously used your talents and leveraged those in different ways. And I'm sure when you were a kid in Wales, you never thought you'd be a multifamily property investor with houses in Covington, Kentucky. But here you are, right?
No. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And what I would say is that on leaving, hopefully it's been inspiring to people. And it's just like, if you don't know where to start, just have that intrigue, have that desire to learn. It doesn't matter if you haven't figured it out yet, right? Just have that intrigue, right? And the internet, and you'll find whatever it is, right? Just have that intrigue and don't just give up. Be like, realize, hopefully you listen to this and you realize that if you want to create a side hustle, if you want to create something more with your life, that you can. Doesn't matter. Don't listen to a single person. Listen to us, right?
Yeah.
We're better than everyone. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, we try. We do stuff. So, I mean, we got that going on.
Well, speaking of the internet, man, how do people get a hold of you to listen to your stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the best way is if you go to wrestlingwithrealestate.com. There's links to my social media, to my Instagram, to my podcast, to my Facebook. If you guys want to get in touch with me, there's a place in there we can even hop on a call if you want to talk about real estate. And also, as I talked about multifamily before, me and one of my partners put a video together about how to underwrite multifamily properties because it can seem intimidating with all the numbers and how to understand it. So we put up, I think it's about a 15-minute video on there. If you just go to my website, wrestlingwithrealestate.com, and sign up there, you'll get the video instantly and just breaks down the basics of how to underwrite deals. So hopefully that's useful to a few people. I know it would have helped me when I started.
Yeah, it's invaluable. It's proper underwriting is where you're going to make your money because you're not going to make your money up later. Invaluable to have good, especially easily understood process. That's
I think the finance part and how to leverage equity and things like that, people need to understand how that works. That's the hardest part, because if you walk into a bank and you don't understand that stuff, they're not going to give you loans.
Well, even before you get to the point where you're going to the bank, the fact that you're going to walk through this deal and you're going to – are you going to tie yourself up trying to negotiate this deal if you do quick – you know, you're quick underwriting and you're like, this thing sucks. I'm really going to have to hit a 10 out of 10 on all of my value add to make this deal even cash flow.
Yeah.
Then you're just going to say, screw it. That's what having a good underwriting system in place is hugely beneficial. And then obviously when you go to the bank and you have to have your pro forma and all that other stuff, you know, underwriting and due diligence are huge parts of that. So yeah, that's awesome that you put that together, because that's something that gets overlooked. Everybody's like, well, how do you find a deal? How do you find this? Who gives a shit? If the numbers don't make sense, the numbers don't make sense. And how do you know if the numbers don't make sense? You have a great underwriting process.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. And I had so much trouble on that, because what you pay matters, right? You make your money when you buy. So what you pay matters, because when you make your money when you buy. You'll hear that all the time in real estate. And just one more thing as well with real estate. Anyone's listening, they might be thinking, oh, I don't have money, right? That's another limiting belief. Sorry, not to keep you guys any longer, but the limiting belief is I don't have money. The good thing about real estate is you don't need your own money, right? You need money.
Yes.
But it can be someone else's. So I'll leave you guys with that. Just don't let that, please, please, please do not let that stop you. The fact that you think that you have no money. You have people around you. I guarantee you have people somewhere that's willing to do a deal with you.
That's right.
So when you come to visit your property, I'm going to wrestle you.
Okay.
No, I'm not.
I'll be there to time it. I'll time it with a stopwatch
I don't want any part of it.
See how quick goes.
But we will get jiu-jitsu. You have some skills, I'd say, but maybe my size and strength will get me out of it.
I'm strong. I'm just kidding. No, but if you do come in town, let me know. We'll get some drinks and we'll get Joe down here to have a beer. He'll probably make us go up towards Montgomery where he's from. So we'll have a drink or something up there.
For sure. Absolutely, man. I would love to.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate your time, Barry. Thanks a lot. And we'll let you get on with the rest of your day.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, sir. Thank you.